Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. I tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right over there in the heart of the Grove. They come out this Friday, and every Friday they have an all-new music happy hour going on. 10% off any purchase, free beer from Four Hands Brewery, and live vinyl spinning. And of course, new vinyl in store from... they have reissues from Peter Gabriel, Madonna, Dave Matthews' Crash, his first-time vinyl print 20th anniversary edition. So come out and grab a copy of that. And then on Sunday, July 17th, come out and see friend of the show, Carson Mann of the Scandaleros, doing a live in-store Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. More listings for records and events and everything, you can follow them online at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com.
Yo, what's up? This is ATG from Discrepancies, and I'm here to let you know about a huge show that we've got coming up on August 6th at Pops. $8 will get you in the door, and it's going to be us versus Inner Outlines as a dual CD release show slash battle royale. We're going to be playing with our friends Ashlyn, our friends Apollo's Daughter, and our friends with Forgetting January. So make sure you come out and have a great time with us. We're all going to be there and having a great night.
He's not me.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio, it's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, this is Jeremy from the Bottoms Up Blues Gang. You're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out in the National Blues Museum here on Washington Avenue with Jeremy Siegel Moss. Welcome to the show, man.
Hi, Shane. Thanks for having me.
Man, this is an absolute honor, man. I've been a fan of your work as a musician, as a blues fan. Everything you do, man, it's just like it's been something. You've been on my radar for a long time as somebody I wanted to kind of get to talk to and get to know better, and just I'm glad it kind of worked out today. It's just something, like I said, I've been trying to figure out the right way to go about doing it, and then finally all the pieces came together, and we're here today to talk about blues and everything on St. Louis. So thank you for doing this.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
I mentioned when we were talking about booking this, I ran into you, watched you play over at Venice a little while ago, and of course, you know, there's a lot of friends in the house, everybody's talking, and I didn't want to interrupt, but yeah, it was a real treat to watch you play over there. And I actually was in the boat bar. I did a podcast with the Toe Fire Tribe over there, and so that was a lot of fun. So that's a lot of what I do. I go around, I go to these different spots all over town trying to record with some of my favorites around town. And so I'm glad you picked National Blues Museum today. It's my first time down here. And
I'm glad you came down here. Really. Yeah. It's a special thing in St. Louis and long time coming.
Yeah, beautiful facility. I'm excited to finish the tour. We kind of got a quick run through, but just a lot to take in here. This is a... And of course, you showed me the St. Louis room right up front here. We have our own room with all of our local living legends and stuff, and past and present. So
yeah, so the museum has been 6 years in coming, but 150 years of music in the making. You know, St. Louis's history, especially in blues, is so long and so rich. And so it only makes sense that the National Blues Museum would be in St. Louis.
Sure.
And when you come down here, you can see all sorts of, there's some artifacts and there's a lot of interactives that you can see, the player piano or the jug room. But like you were saying, there's that St. Louis room, which I was I worked really hard on putting that together.
Yeah.
So that's a special room to me. And if you come down to the museum, you'll see we have this great history wall that features musicians like Henry Townsend, who is, as far as I know, the only musician to have recorded in 9 decades,
yeah,
you know, in a row. And tells a little bit of his story about how he came from Cairo, Illinois, mm-hmm. 9 years old, hopped a train, and then stayed here for 90 years.
Sure.
And then talks a little bit also about some of the St. Louis history as far as like Johnny Johnson or Oliver Sane or some of the early recordings, as well as the St. Louis Blues Society. There's also a 42-picture photo show of contemporary living blues people that was done by Peter Newcomb, who's a local photographer. If you've ever been down to BB's Jazz Blues and Soups, you'll see some of his pictures there.
Cool.
There's a history wall of black radio that Bernie Hayes helped write, and that has you know, the importance of how early on there weren't black radio DJs, and who were the first ones, and what were the first stations to have it, and on a national level, and also in St. Louis. And mm-hmm. talks a little bit about KDHX too, about how they, you know, some of the DJs on KDHX have been playing blues for almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And then there's a listening station for the Blues Society's 2 compilation CDs. So there's 29 artists doing 29 original songs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice last stop when you get through the whole museum to see how important St. Louis was. And we really appreciate the National Blues Museum allowing that to be there.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to say, too, I recently met Alonzo Townsend,
mm-hmm.
And we've quickly become good friends through, we both actually are employees at Broadway Oyster Bar,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't realize who his father was, and then conversation came up somehow, or whatever it was, and I was like, well, man, come on the show, tell me about your dad. So if you want to know a little more about Henry Townsend, besides coming down here to read that, you can listen to Alonzo talk about him and his dad. And so it was really something special, that episode. It was a lot of fun to get to talk the blues with him and his dad, and about his dad.
You know, I love Alonzo, and I think there's a lot of reasons that I like him as a person, but also when you look at blues, it's often perceived as old music,
mm-hmm.
And people like Alonzo are the guys that make it real, as if it's happening now.
For sure.
And while his dad has been playing, you know, played forever, that he continues the conversation about him, and that he helps spur more youth to get involved, or creates excitement about the St. Louis. His dad had a lot of pride for St. Louis, and mm-hmm. it really spills out of Alonzo. I think he's doing a great job as a person, as a, you know, someone who's a proponent for what we're all doing here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know he's friendly with Marquise Knox, another young guy keeping blues alive in town, and I saw his picture on the wall as well in here. So yeah, just it's great to see, like you're saying, a younger generation of blues musicians and people that are fans of it, keeping it going and stuff. So
something to point out there is this year will be the 15th annual Baby Blues Showcase, which is a show that I started 15 years ago, clearly, with the Bottoms Up Blues Gang, because at that time, all of the old guys were still alive. Johnny Johnson, Oliver Sane, Bankhead, Tommy Bankhead, you know, they were playing at BB's every night. And so it was just like, every single night at BB's, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And there was no way this little group of kids were going to get a gig at BB's.
Right.
And so we were like, well, we can't. This is right when we started playing. Like, well, we can't get a gig there. But maybe if we all get together and find all the young folks and start a show.
Right.
So we did. And they gave us the day. It's always the Sunday after Thanksgiving at BB's. And that features blues musicians under the age of 30. So we were in it for the first 5 years. We organized it and performed in it. And then, like, immediately aged ourselves out of our own show. So now, for the last 10 years, we've been putting it on. And the people that have come through that show, like Marquise, Alonzo, does the emceeing now with Carrie Liston, who's the singer in the Bottoms Up Blues Gang. But if you think of the musicians that have come through there, whether Pokey played it, or Hokey Lafarge played it, or Marquise, one of his first big gigs, were there, and he tore down the house. He was like 14 years old. You know, pretty much anyone under the age of 30, we've roped in at, you know, one year or another to play at that show. And it's what's cool to me is to see kids who are just getting started who are now full-blown professional musicians like Marquise.
Yeah.
And we have those things in St. Louis. We have these annual events and this trying to help the bottom rise up, you know, because if the young people don't play blues, it will just become old music that you can find on recordings.
That is something I've been through this show again. I've been trying to do a lot of that as well. A lot of people that have been on, a lot of the guests have been their very first interview, or, you know, something, just trying to do my part to support the up-and-coming talent and people, you know. And of course, and I love talking to people that I've been fans of for several years too. So I try to keep a nice blend of a variety of talent, and from genre to age, and you know, and everything. And but it's something really special, I think, about those episodes when I get to talk to somebody who's there. It's their very first interview or something, and where they can kind of get the ball rolling a little bit, you know. Hopefully they'll be getting used to more in the near year, you know, future and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, that's one of the cool things about St. Louis. You know, if I was a musician, I didn't start playing music till I was 25. Mm-hmm. If I had started playing music 25 in LA or New York or New Orleans or Nashville, like, they're associated with really talented musicians that you never really get a shot.
Right.
And in St. Louis, because we don't have a lot of industry here, we just breed musicians just left and right. They just kind of, you know, they just rise up. It's a great place to kind of like try everything out. You can be effective here, you know, you can be heard, because while there's a lot of musicians, it's kind of a quiet scene, because there's no really effective record labels or people swooping in to take people out and on the road. So it's one of those places where, and this is true for especially in blues, and in East St. Louis early on, where a lot of guys would just cut their chops here. You know, you can learn how to be on the radio by talking to someone like you, or go to KDHX, and then when you get the call from NPR, you're not nervous, you're prepared for it, right? Or, you know, you can play, when Bottoms Up started playing, we were playing over 300 gigs a year just in St. Louis.
Wow.
We played so much that Carrie needed vocal surgery and Adam got ulcers. Hmm. Adam's our harmonica player.
Yeah.
So we definitely toned that down since then. But if you really want to cut your teeth in a community of musicians, this is a great place to do that.
Sure. And even if you're, I always feel like, you know, people, again, kind of get the stars in their eyes and want to head for the bigger cities. But even if you were looking to hit the road and tour, St. Louis is a great spot to tour out of, because you're centrally located right in the middle of the map. So it's like, you know, it's a nice to run to Chicago or Memphis or whatever for the weekend. You can easily do that. So yeah.
Bottoms Up, until recently, was touring at least 6 months a year. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of St. Louis is that you are a one-day drive from two-thirds of the country.
Right.
You know, 2 days, you can almost get to the West Coast if you really put yourself to it. But with the reasonable rent, with the amount of gigs that are available, plus the amount of elder musicians and talent here to help teach you how to do whatever you want to do. I mean, I have like 10 guitar teachers, and they're all awesome.
Yeah.
So it puts us, we're really proud to be from St. Louis. I'm really proud. I mean, our community of musicians are clearly very proud of it. But if we were spending about 3 months a year in New Orleans for a while there, and if we wanted to go to Colorado, that's a second day drive. Like, you can't just, you know, we can get from St. Louis to Denver in almost 15 hours. You can get to New Orleans in just over 10. You know, Chicago and Memphis, 4 or 5 hours. Kansas City, 4 hours. Indy, you can get to the East Coast in 15 hours. Like, it's as far as touring musicians, it's a fantastic place to live.
Definitely.
You can buy a house, play gigs, you can practice, and keep it reasonable. Or, for instance, if you wanted to live in New York City and be a musician there, and your rent is, you know, for a year is what it costs to buy a house here.
Yeah.
That's not really effective to be a musician.
Right. So you you are born and raised in St. Louis here?
Yeah. I was born in University City and grew up there. And I was gone for a long time. And I came back. I traveled for a long time. and after high school. Went to a couple years of college, traveled for a while, went back to college in Washington State, and then joined the circus. And then I was about 24 years old then. And while I was on the road with the circus, the very last part of the circus, it was the Culpeper Merriweather Circus, which is this, there's a few of them left. There's a few of them left in the country, and they're like one ring circuses, and they go to a different town every day and do two shows, and they do it for 8.5 months.
Yeah.
So you get up before sunrise, and you drive to a town, you set up the tent, get everything ready, do a couple shows, take the whole tent down, and get up. So that's a long tour.
Sure.
And towards the end of it, I'd say with a couple weeks left before the end of the season, my RV blew up in Texas, of all places. And so I came back to St. Louis, having not lived here for a long time, to raise enough money to go back on the road. Well, before I left St. Louis, I had a radio show on KCLC 89.1. It was a blues show. It was every Sunday night from 7 to 10, or some version of that. And it was just me and this huge record collection of blues. And I got to listen to everything and find it all. This is all before I was a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back into St. Louis, I only knew a couple people here. And one of them was Eric McSpadden, who's a local harmonica player. Has been here since, I think, the early 80s. If anyone's heard him in town, sure. There's nobody like him.
Actually, I just saw Eric on TV the other night.
Oh, yeah?
On a song stage.
Was he really?
Yeah, did you happen to catch that?
No.
It's on PBS.
I don't have a TV.
Yeah.
I have a thing to watch movies, but
right.
No TV.
Yeah, it's a song competition show on Channel 9 now. And I guess it's a national thing, but this particular section of the show is featured on Illinois, Midwest, and stuff. So there were some St. Louis artists that are on it. Nobody I really recognized, except for I did have there's a group called Slow Down Scarlet out of O'Fallon, Illinois. I just had on the show, and they were involved in it. That's how I heard about it. So I recorded on my DVR, and I forget the girl's name now, the songwriter, but she invited Eric on stage with her to play harmonica for the live performance of the show. So it's it was really something cool to turn on the TV, and I see Eric McSpadden on there playing harmonica. So,
you know, I mean, just to tell stories about Eric McSpadden, when I was on the road with the circus, was around the times that the Kurt Warner Rams won the Super Bowl or something like that. And I was in this little, like, mountain town in Northern California at a bar with just a bunch of farmers, basically, and they had the game on. And at halftime, they broke to BB's. And Eric's big face shows up on the TV, and I'm looking around the room like, hey, that's... Oh, and no one knew. I was like, oh, well, it's lost on all of you. But that's Eric McSpadden.
Right.
And Eric is a great singer, harmonica player. He has played with pretty much everybody in town.
Yeah.
So I went to find Eric, and because when I was... I can say this now, but when I was like 19, I used to sneak into the Oyster Bar on Mondays with an empty guitar case. The Soulard Blues Band does the longest running blues jam in the world there.
Yeah.
And so I would sneak in just to hear the music, and that's where I met Eric, and he kind of taught me most of what I know now. We ended up living together. So I started hanging out with him when I came off the road with the circus while I was saving up money to go back on the road. And that was right around the time that the Beale on Broadway opened. And every Thursday... Eric and Brian Curran were doing a duo right when Beale opened. And Carrie Liston, who's the Bottoms Up Blues Gang singer, and Adam Andrews, who's our harmonica player, was friends with Eric. We were like the three people in the bar the first night they did it. And that's how we all met.
Right.
And from there on, once they started letting me play music, I just feel like I have a responsibility not to not do that.
Right. So why was it just that... meeting all these people that inspired the music, or why did it take you so till 25 to start playing?
I just never thought that I could actually play music.
Yeah.
It was never ingrained in me. Now, when I grew up, my dad took me to concert after concert. That's one of the things that we shared, and so I was always a huge listener. I loved music, still love music.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to get the CDs. We'd see all kinds of music, whether it was like Kiss or B.B. King or Eric Clapton or Alana Miles. Like, we just saw music. That's what we did together. And so the music was in me. I was never really empowered to play it.
Right.
Like my dad played guitar, so and I had a guitar, but that's not the same thing of learning how to perform on stage or how to hold the rhythm down for the whole song. Sure. Or all the things you need to do. But as soon as guys like Brian Kern or Eric or guys like Benny Smith, who was one of my major influences in town, once they saw that I had a guitar and started playing it, they basically demanded that I continue doing it.
Yeah.
And I really went from, you know, having a guitar and knowing two chords to playing 300 gigs a year. Like, it just happened all of a sudden.
That's crazy.
And that was 15 years ago.
Yeah. That's kind of similar for me. Like, my music's always been in the family. You know, my dad played, and we were huge fans of music. Always had, you know, music playing around the house and everything. But, you know, he played guitar, harmonica, and, you know, a little bit of, like, violin and piano and stuff. Just kind of dabbled in it. But harmonica was probably his... Like, you know, the way he's best at. He did a lot of, like, bluegrass playing and stuff, go to, you know, jam with people and stuff like that. But I don't know. For me, it's like I love it. You know, obviously doing the show out of the love of music. But never had the knack to play. You know, I think it was sixth grade, we had a middle school band, and they... had, you know, everybody could pretty much sign up if they wanted to try out for the band and things, and I picked cornet, and I played for...
You picked a hell of an instrument.
Yeah.
Start with the cornet.
All right. Yeah, I was just something about that, and I tried it, and I knew I wasn't any good, but, like, my teacher pretty much kind of, in more or less words, that he was like, you know, either you can try really hard or you can go back to gym. And I was like, all right, I'll see you later. And so I stuck to sports and played football and basketball through school. But I don't know. I would love to learn how to play and actually apply myself. But just never, like I said, never had that. Nothing's told me to, hey, pick up a guitar or try this. And so maybe someday it'll happen for me.
I can say that it's always an option.
Right.
All it means is sitting down and doing it every single day. Mm-hmm. And I really feel, because I never planned to be a musician, I really feel honored every time I'm given the opportunity. It doesn't matter if it's hot. I mean, I might complain, like, oh, it's so hot, the gig's so long, I have to lug all this stuff in. But in my heart, I wouldn't want to do anything else given the opportunity.
Yeah, that's incredible, man. So you did the circus stuff. Now you're getting into playing music and stuff. But when's all this? How do you become like this face of St. Louis blues now? You know, you're doing the Blues Society. You're a member of that and helping out. And you're doing now here at the Blues Museum and stuff. Where's all?
So before I was a musician, I was an organizer. I spent, growing up, we were always protesting something, whether it was, like, McDonald's using styrofoam or what have you. And I finished up school at Evergreen State College, and that was a very activist-oriented school. And it was really, that was my plan, to be an activist writer was the plan. Mm-hmm. So I have all of those tendencies in me as part of my personality before I got to music. And, you know, fighting for your community, supporting the people that need help, you know, people who don't have the same options you do.
Right.
Or the tools that you need to be successful in America for whatever reason. And so it's been one of those things. It actually took me a while to be okay with playing music, because when you play music, it's like, hey, come look at me, play my songs on stage and give us money and,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. And I always felt that was a little selfish when I was up there. But I did, over time, realize how playing music affects people, makes you feel better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're having a rough day, or when I always say, like, you know, when Barack Obama has to go upstairs and read 1,000 pages, he's got Miles or, you know, Aretha on in the background to help him through that, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
And so music is a form of activism. That's how I came to terms with that. I really went to music school, but on stage or on the streets for 10 years. I feel like a part of the community, and the people who taught me, guys like Benny Smith or Eric McSpadden, or you know, the ones who are gone, like Oliver Sane or Johnny Johnson or Henry Towns, those guys taught me so much. And I feel that if the world doesn't know who they are, that I'm not being responsible to the privilege they offered me by passing on some of their knowledge. Some of it. I didn't get all of it. There's no way. But so that's where, especially as I get a little older, I want to participate in making something greater than myself or my one band. Or and that's where, so I look for vehicles and ways to do that. The Baby Blue Showcase was while it started as something for us, has become something way beyond us, and yeah. You know, and a place to celebrate the young blues in St. Louis. The St. Louis Blues Society has been around for 32 years, and they've done incredible work. They started the Blues Heritage Festival, which later became the Big Muddy Festival in the late 80s. They started that, and I've participated with them on and off throughout the years, writing for their blues letter and that sort of thing. In the last 3 or 4 years, especially with so many of the elder musicians dying, and that when I go around St. Louis and people don't even know the names, it's really upsetting to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to New Orleans and everybody knows Louis Armstrong is from New Orleans, right? They named the airport after him. But in St. Louis, getting someone to know that Albert King, Fontella Bass, Miles Davis, Johnny and all the guys I've mentioned, they're all from here. And so they're all part of our personal identity, even if we don't know it. And then with the National Blues Museum coming, being so important to help organize for a better St. Louis tomorrow, and to recognize that it's one of the things that we all have in common. We all have St. Louis's musical heritage in common. It doesn't matter where in St. Louis you live. And it seems to me that when we travel around the world, everyone's like, oh, St. Louis, like great blues city. It is. But in St. Louis, there seems to be some sort of like space between the people of St. Louis on a general, I'm making a generality here, knowing our own history. You know, whether it's not just music. I mean, it could be the buildings or the, you know, all the things that go into the places we walk by every day when you're down on the riverfront.
Like, yeah.
So I got involved with the Blues Society and then became the chairman of the board almost 2 years ago now. And for a while there, that the Blues Society was really not doing much. You know, after everyone kind of, there was a time about 5, 10 years ago where like we were going to funerals every month, at least one, and not little funerals, not like, it's always sad when someone dies, but like major legends in music, like when they left, there's this gaping hole in St. Louis left. And so with the museum coming, and also when I look around how much amazing music is in St. Louis, it only seemed like the right thing for me to do as far as giving back to the community by helping further the community using the vehicle of the St. Louis Blues Society. And in the last 2 years, we've really reinvigorated the organization, the website's back up, the membership is on the upswing again. We have a blues letter that comes out bi-monthly. Religiously, it comes out bi-monthly.
Yeah.
We've put out now 2 compilation CDs, which feature original music by St. Louis people, which is another thing is if in Nashville, it's so important to write original music because they can't use a cover in the movie or whatever, you
right.
know, or whatever country star can't cover another cover of a cover. So trying to push musicians towards original music and proper production and promotion. Our education is coming back around, you know, doing blues in schools and providing material for people to teach with, and getting involved. I mean, we're involved in almost 50 events this year.
That's awesome.
So it means something to me because I have nephews that will know who Benny Smith is, and they
right.
will know who Oliver Sane is, or Eric McSpadden. You know, like this is... It's important to mm-hmm. me. I care about it because these people didn't have to be nice to me, and they didn't have to teach me anything. And so now I pass it on.
Yeah, man, pay it forward.
That's right.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, you're telling the story about people like not knowing their history here and stuff, and I had a friend came to me a while back, and he's like, you know, I go to live music almost every night. Just I love it. And he goes, said something about wanting to see some blues music, and he's like, is there any good place to go see blues music in town? And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I do every night, man. Like, you know, it's like, he's like, oh, I didn't know. And I, you know, he's like, I didn't know there was, you know, I was like, we named a hockey team after it about, because, you know, so much blues history here in St. Louis. So
that's the perfect example,
right,
of the hockey team is named the St. Louis Blues, and the logo is a music note.
Right.
And there's really no relationship to the community, yeah, in that way. And I think there's several of those things that kind, sure, of filter through. But I put that partly on the responsibility of the community. Not, it doesn't top down. They're not supposed to know about us, I guess. Mm-hmm. But there are very few books. You know, like there's the book, Kevin Belford's book, The Devil at the Confluence, which is the most recent book. And it's a great book. I mean, it's got all the pictures and all Benny's names and all these people are in there, but it's out of print. Mm-hmm. There's a Henry Townsend book, out of print. There's a Johnny Johnson book, it's out of print. There's a Petey Wheatstraw book, out of print. So when you go to the library or you go to the store, you can't even find them. And so how are we going to pass on that information to anyone, right, if we're not providing it? So there's like very few documentaries, like... We're just talking about the Ken Burns Blues series and how he mentions St. Louis, but he never lingers on it. Yeah. And my guess is because he went to the library, and we're not in the library. We are a living, like, it's real folk music in the sense of one guy passes it on to the next guy, passes it on to the next guy. And in there are some recordings that you can find, but a lot of them are out of print. And there's no, like, here, go buy the 300-song discography of St. Louis music.
Right.
It doesn't exist. So it becomes imperative and in an immediate way to get more interviews by these guys or put together documentaries or for us just put out the Blues Letter and continue to push those names out there so that people can find them on their own.
Yeah, definitely. You were saying you were also involved in Blues Society is also involved in Big Muddy. And
sure.
So we figure we ought to toss these dates out there. So Big Muddy Blues Festival is Labor Day weekend, mm-hmm, every year.
This is the 21st year,
yeah,
for the Big Muddy Blues Festival down on the Cleeds Landing, which is right down there by the arch. Don't be scared of the construction, yeah, which is, this is one of those transition years because of all the construction under the arch and the casino finally stopped tearing down the landing, you know, right, in that way. But the Big Muddy was originally called the Blues and Heritage Festival and was created by the St. Louis Blues Society and run for several years before the, through a turn of events, ultimately the Cleeds Landing Association owns the festival. And they've had multiple producers produce the show for them. There's been great years and there's been not so great years. And the last few years have been hard because it, you know, in St. Louis, we're very accustomed to free events, whether it's the VP Fair or the zoo or the History Museum or whatnot. And this event has been free for 20 years. And just recently, they've needed to start charging a minimal fee. For people that don't put on festivals, it's hard to recognize that oftentimes just to set up a festival for one day is in the range of $80,000 to $100,000.
Right.
You know, just to set it up. Pay the musicians for one day. The second day, it's much cheaper because the stage is already set up, right? So so there have been some changes over the years. This year, I was given the opportunity, thankfully, by the Landing Association to do the booking and the entertainment coordinating. So this year, we're going 100% local St. Louis musicians.
That's awesome, man.
Which, to me, does not take away from the talent whatsoever. I'm all for national acts. You know, we've toured. I think it's if no one liked national acts, we wouldn't get to play, sure, anywhere else. But somewhere in all of this, St. Louis music got lost a little bit. And so trying to bring that to the forefront. This is still not, the Blues Society is not involved in the event so much as the fact that I actually, and we're doing work for both organizations. The Blues Society is always in support of anything that is blues in St. Louis. And this isn't just anything. This is 47 St. Louis acts in 2 days.
Yeah.
So it's Saturday and Sunday, Labor Day weekend, down on the landing. It's if you buy your tickets in advance, it's $8 a day. If you come down day of show, it's $10. So just to put that into like relative space for you, that's 50 cents a band.
Yeah, that's
right.
So it's cheaper than iTunes. Maybe.
It is cheaper than iTunes. It's cheaper than going to see one band at the Broadway Oyster Bar.
Right.
So that's something that we'll all have to work on a little bit. But I think it's important for us to pay for the things we care about. Mm-hmm. And a minimal donation like that is not too much to me.
Right.
I hope it's not for other people. But more importantly, how about 100% local St. Louis music?
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know what it is, but I've been, again, a big advocate of St. Louis music, trying now to get people to support local as much as I can. There is some kind of... if you say it's local music, it's for whatever reason people think it's not as good. So, I don't know why that is, but
sure.
I've been trying to get rid of that stigma around. I don't know why, it's just like I said, there's so much talent in this city, and a lot of stuff people don't even know about, and I just the other night I had an opportunity to three bands play on my show. I booked it all and I promoted it all, and I had people coming out and wow, these guys are so good. That for me was, really felt good that people are finally taking notice that there's how many great players are in the city and stuff. So anyway, a whole day full of local music is very exciting for me. So, yeah.
So this is 2 days of, and there's three outdoor stages and three indoor stages. The outdoor stages on the main stage will feature such acts as Big George Brock, David D., Roland Johnson, Renee Smith, Marsha Evans, Boo Boo Davis, Arthur Williams. Then you have guys like bringing in the Funky Butt Brass Band, yeah. Or Jeremiah Johnson. And then there's also three clubs within three of the venues down there, which is the Morgan Street Brewery, Gateway Sports Emporium, and Big Daddy's. And that's where we put the duo and trio acts, because so often, as a guy who's in a duo trio act, we get lost on those big stages, and we always get put first, and so it doesn't really make sense for that. That way we could feature so many more musicians. And in that situation, you'll see guys like Eric McSpadden and Sharon Foner, or... the Dust Covers, the Bottle Snakes, Tom Hall, Jim McLaren, the Fab Foners. There's a lot of acts and varieties of blues.
Sure.
And then what I'm really also excited, because not only are we talking about featuring St. Louis music, but we will be doing two shows at the National Blues Museum here in the stage area, doing tributes to Johnny Johnson on Saturday from 12:30 till 2:30 before the festival opens. And on Sunday, same time for Henry Townsend. And Alonzo Townsend will be there with Ron Edwards. We'll be telling stories about them. Might be able to show a little film, have some music, and hey, he taught me this. And
yeah.
So there's a whole story here about St. Louis. Having the museum and the Landing Association working together and the Blue Society working together, over the last few years, it's starting to become a concerted effort to move forward and to provide the context for, blues is meaningful to us, but it's also worth money to the people that do things, mm-hmm. or jobs or pride. I think of Jazz Fest often down in New Orleans, and all those musicians get work, and so do the guys that set up the stage and the ones who run the sound and set up the perimeter, but also once people leave the festival, the clubs get business, the chefs and the cooks and the cabbies and the guys at the airport and the hotels. There's so many jobs. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they're all fostering pride for their city based off of the thing that is their city.
Yeah.
And in St. Louis, we have an incredible music scene. As far as I'm concerned, we have one of the best music scenes in the country. It is not the biggest music scene, and it's not the most progressive music scene. But as far as a large group of musicians continuing a tradition of whatever genre, all influencing each other, as far as I can tell, 99% of the musicians here are really swell people, and they look out for each other. It's not so cutthroat as some of the other cities I've been in.
Yeah.
and to remind ourselves that we can all be proud of the history that is St. Louis. I mean, if you're a rock and roll guy, you got Chuck Berry and Johnny Johnson. If you're a ragtime guy, you got Scott Joplin. If you like jazz, well, you know, you got Miles just up the river a little bit. You know, like, we have, Wilco, right around the corner. Yeah. So, like, we have this incredible group of this history to be proud of and to own as our own. It's something we have in common. And hopefully this kind of lineup and the way we're trying to approach it will provide the opportunity for people to be proud of their own city.
Yeah, man. I think that's incredible. I applaud you. I thank you for all the work you've done trying to, you know, I know there's a crew of people to thank too, but, you know, just it's great to see people doing this stuff and keeping it going. And like I said, it's sometimes it can be a little thankless at times, I think. But, but thank you. Appreciate keeping blues music going and everything as a fan.
So. Oh, my pleasure.
So we also, you said there's also the Atomic Blues Festival that'll be in coming up too.
One of the aspects of the St. Louis Blues Society is our education area. That could be, we can do anything with education. We can go to schools and teach kids. We can also teach musicians about how to up their game a little bit. We have a new education director on our board. His name is Mike Battle, and he is the drummer for Marquise Knox. He also has his own non-for-profit that works with children, you know, through music. And so the Atomic Blues Festival, which will be our second annual, happens at the Atomic Cowboy September 18th this year. It's just a one-day, eight-hour festival featuring all local acts, and the proceeds of that event go to our education fund. And it's a really cool day, you know? Like, we bounce the stages, so there's always music, and we have raffles, and pass out information, and the volunteers get to all have a good time. Also reasonably priced, I believe.
Yeah.
So that comes up September 8th. All of this information you can find on the St. Louis Blues Society website, which is stlouisbluessociety.org. And we just constantly are supporting. I mean, if you're out there and you're listening and you have a blues event in St. Louis or a blues group or a book about blues, or you like to paint the pictures of blues people, let us know.
Sure.
Because our whole job is to be out there supporting people who are working for blues.
Yeah, that's great, man. Get involved. I mean, if you, like you're saying, if you... You want to participate or be heard or any of this stuff, there's plenty of opportunities.
And we need your help. We really do. I mean, especially a podcast like this. I mean, we would all like to see a better St. Louis. I don't know anyone that doesn't want to see a better St. Louis. I can see people that give up on St. Louis or who are beat down by St. Louis. But all of us would prefer it to be a city where we all can make a living, where maybe crime is a little bit less, where we can send our kids to school, mm-hmm. where we can gather around something like music or food and celebrate that. And to do that, it takes work. And it takes a work over a long period of time. None of this will change overnight. So if you're interested in getting involved at any level, I'm very accessible. I'm sure we can make my information available or whatnot. There's work to be done. And it's work, but it's community building. And it's a way that it brings smiles to me every day when I see people walking through the museum, when I see them down at the Broadway Oyster Bar listening to the Soulard Blues Band or talking to Alonzo, and Alonzo's all smiling and telling stories about his dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, that makes me very, very happy. Mm-hmm. And if we want to see that continue, we need to work for that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, I guess we'll look to close this up. But thank you so much, Jeremy. This has been a real treat. Thank you for taking some time out, and thank the National Blues Museum for letting us hang out here today and record here. You can see Jeremy every Tuesday at the Venice Cafe. How long have you been doing that jam now?
About a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it's always myself and Eric McSpadden. Tommy Halloran usually comes. Also, the last Tuesday, Johnny Diamond, the harmonica player, comes down and plays, but it's not an open jam. We're not like trying to put that out there,
right.
But it is a jam amongst our community and our bands. And if you do want to come jam, come talk to us.
Yeah.
But really, it's a place. What's cool about Tuesdays is that there's no pretense. You know, I'm not trying to promote my band. I don't have a CD for sale there. We come and we sit down and we play music for the sake of music.
Yeah.
And hopefully you can come and enjoy it with us.
Yeah, very cool. And then keep an eye out for the 15th anniversary of Bottoms Up.
Yeah, so the Bottoms Up Blues Gang turns 15 this year. Yeah. We are a full-blown teenager with rebellion and all that. And so we'll be celebrating 15 years at the Broadway Oyster Bar on August 20th. The show starts at 10, and I'll be doing the first set with my Tuesday crew. And then Bottoms Up will play a long set. And then Carrie, our singer, she also plays in the band Pepperland, which is the Beatles tribute band. So they'll close out the night. So it has the two groups that Carrie and I play in outside of Bottoms Up, and then we'll be doing the set in the middle. And that will be a blast.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of dates to mark on your calendar. Everything will be listed again on my website, rockpaperpodcast.com. And but yeah, continue support St. Louis music, support the blues, and come out to the festivals. We got to and see all these great locals. If there's, especially if there's some people you haven't heard of yet, this would be a great opportunity. $10 to get you in, and or eight. What you said, eight before?
Eight in advance.
Advance. Yeah. So
yeah.
So yeah, you know, it's dirt cheap to see lots of great St. Louis music. So
yeah, and great is an understatement. It's going to be really great. I mean, it's really good. Like, but yeah. So you can also find that out at BigMuddyBluesFestival.com.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, again, thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Shane.
Have a great day. Thanks, man.